This is The Full Spectrum. The show provides a wide range of news and competing opinions. The commentaries, beliefs, and viewpoints expressed by segment hosts and guests do not necessarily represent those of WJSU-FM, Jackson State University, or its administrators. The content of this program is for informational and/or entertainment value only and not meant as an endorsement or recommendation in lieu of professional guidance on relevant topics.
It's the full spectrum. It's the full spectrum. We got news. Entertainment. Interviews. And so much more. It's the full spectrum.
On today's show, an interview with the Commissioner of the Mississippi Institutions of Higher Learning following the resignation of JSU President Dr. Carolyn Myers, and a visit from Jackson City Council Member DeKeither Stamps. Welcome to The Full Spectrum for Wednesday, October 26th. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. Let's begin with weather from our own Meredith Michelle.
All right, Dwayne, happy Wednesday to you. Under partly cloudy skies right now in the capital city with a high of 82 degrees. We are expecting a low of 62 degrees for the remainder of tonight. So a little warmer than what we've been used to for the last several days. Now, Thursday calls for about a 20% chance of rain. But for all of you trick-or-treaters out there, the weather forecast looks pretty good. Looking for a high of 84 tomorrow with cloudy skies and a low of 60. Dwayne, back to you.
Okay, well, earlier this week, Jackson State University President Dr. Carolyn Myers submitted her letter of resignation to the Commissioner of the Mississippi Institutions of Higher Learning, Dr. Glenn Boyce, and the President of the IHL College Board of Trustees, Dr. Douglas Roos. I spoke earlier today with IHL Commissioner Boyce about the events surrounding Dr. Myers' decision to step down. You received Dr. Myers' resignation letter. Did it come as a surprise to you?
Oh, I think it was a surprise. Yes, I do, Dwayne. I think it certainly was a surprise, the timing of it and everything.
As to the letter, she asked for a couple of things in terms of compensation and moving out of the residence. She was specific about when she would move out. Were any of those things any problem as far as you could see?
Everything that she's certainly legally entitled to are not a problem, and as far as when she needs to move out is not a problem.
Okay, before we get to what happens now, I just want to ask you what you can tell us about the financial health of Jackson State.
Well, I think the financial health right now is something that we're concerned about, and it's something that we're working at very hard with Jackson State, with this Matthew Cotrer and Lindsay firm that we've hired to assist us, and with IHL. And we really are working as a team together in order to try to take and work forward and to build up these cash balances, to build up these debt ratios, and to ensure that we, most of all, don't have any more deficit spending. Because at this point in time, we really can't afford to have deficit spending. And there's also issues coming up in the future that lend itself to us needing to reclaim a much more stronger financial position.
The Clarion Ledger reported that three names have been floated. I'm not sure where they're getting this information, but they said Rod Page, James Rennick, and Dr. Elaine Hayes Anthony as interim presidents. As far as you know, is that accurate?
I don't know where they got those names either.
Okay.
So kind of wondering that myself. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, there's some names there that certainly may be feasible, but I'm not sure where they got them either.
Okay. So what happens now? So I guess appointing an interim president is the first order of business?
Yes, sir, it is. There's no question. Appointing the first order of business is to get an interim president in place. And I need an interim president, certainly with the qualifications and experience befitting of the university, and also an individual who understands the financial climate and the challenges that we have in order to raise the financial profile of the university.
And how do you go about that process?
Well, I will tell you that I've gone about the process by just looking at individuals on campus that I've been notified about. I've been taking calls that people have made recommendations, and I've also certainly been talking to people in the higher education business and trying to find and come up with names. And then, you know, as I look at those names and consider their resumes and consider what they've done, eventually I will place some phone calls to talk to some people. Now, and I'm working on this process, you know, as quickly as I possibly can, understanding that time is certainly of the urgency.
Is it possible? I know you don't know for sure yet. What kind of timeline do you think you can give me for appointing an interim president? And is it necessarily that person would or definitely would not be the permanent president?
Okay. I'm trying to work on a timeline, I will tell you, as quickly as possible. That would mean that I would absolutely want to make this announcement sometime first part of next week to at the latest the middle of next week. So I want to get this announcement out there as quickly as I can and get this, whoever this individual is, get them committed as quickly as I can. So this is something that I'm working on consistently and all day long in order to get this taken care of, because I want the university to be at peace as well and to know where it's moving forward and how it's moving forward. I think that's very important.
And as to my other question,
does being appointed
interim preclude you from being the permanent appointment?
That's correct. And absolutely the person that accepts the interim position will not be considered for candidacy for the permanent position.
Okay, so let's go to the second part of the equation then, which is the appointing the permanent president. Tell me about that process and how that's going to work.
Yeah, and that's a long process, so I don't know if you want to hear about all of it, but we would almost be better off sending you our exec IEO search process. I think that would be a better idea, because then you could see exactly what it is. Really, the starting point, though, and I think it would be best if I sent this to you, Duane, because the starting point is the board president is going to name the board search committee member and chair. And so there will be a chair of the board search committee that will be named, and we will be conducting all this in November, the November board meeting, and the regularly scheduled November board meeting. Of course, we'll have to have another meeting called here next week in order to approve the interim, but we won't be discussing this until the regular meeting. And then what we will do is we will select a search consultant firm, and then we will begin in the background getting all the position descriptions, advertisements, everything ready. And then we will begin to ask for recommendations from all the various university and community constituency groups. We will set up what's known as a campus search advisory committee, a CSAC committee. And then we will take and name chairs to that committee and begin holding campus listening sessions along with, if necessary, our community listening sessions. So there's going to be a long, I won't say long, but let's say there is a very carefully thought out process here that we will go through step by step. And perhaps some of the most important parts of that, of course, is certainly hiring a great search firm so that has a wealth of names and can put together a tremendous candidate pool. I think Jackson State University will command a tremendous candidacy pool because it's such a strong university. And I would also suggest that the other pieces that are very, very important is the Campus Search Advisory Committee is very important because they will make recommendations to the board as to the candidates they would like to see the board actually interview, and some of them will be selected to sit on the interview committee as well. So that putting together that committee is a very, very important part of this process. And then finally, and this is important to me as anything, is those listening sessions with the community and the campus, because I want to hear what people feel like the next leader of Jackson State's quality should be. I want to hear where they think Jackson State University should go in the future and what the university should look like, because I am very, very interested in hearing from as many people as possible as to what that should look like. And we will also actually, which we incorporated for the first time ever in the University of Mississippi search, we will have an online component as well, so that we can get as many people's comments as possible who may not be able to make any of these community or campus listening sessions.
Okay, and let me finally ask you this. As to the reserve fund, when did you guys over at IHL first become aware that it had gotten so low? And in the future, are you going to set up a different process for watching the state of that fund?
I think that's an excellent question, by the way. We actually had conversations, and this was prior to my time, but there was a conversation held all the way back in 2014 that was concerned by my predecessor about this, and then there was multiple conversations that have been held from that point forward about needing an expense management plan and a lot of other things that were requested. And what transpired is where this became really more of a greater concern, practically to the crisis point, certainly was just in the past year that the deficit, when it ran from $10 million down to $4.2 million, it became obvious that they weren't meeting any of their projections that they had been giving us for a couple years now, and that the revenue just had not been coming in, and that really expenses had just continued to rise without the revenue coming in. And you just can't continue to operate at a deficit. It's just, you know, none of us can, you know. So that's the answer to that question, and we've been tracking it for a while now. And we don't micromanage our institutions. Please understand that. So when they tell us that this is their projections, this is what they're doing, this is what's going to happen, we monitor it, but we don't take and micromanage it until it becomes to the point where it feels like they absolutely have got to have assistance and help here. Now, the second part of that is, yes, we are absolutely looking at a set criteria and looking at putting in the kind of process so that if institutions reach a certain level according to the metrics or criteria, that immediately there are conversations and conferences held as to why, what's made this occur, and how this is going to be changed and stopped and move the trend line to the other direction. Now, that's not to say that didn't happen, because I firmly believe that did happen throughout this process as well, but the results just didn't happen for what was projected. So that's where we are.
Well, Dr. Glenn Boyce, Commissioner of the Mississippi Institutions of Higher Learning, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to explain some of this to us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that opportunity as well, and I'm looking forward to making sure that the next president of this university is a great candidate and the type of president that the university can be proud of as well.
Okay. Thank you so much. Time for a break. When we come back, we're joined by Jackson City Councilman DeKeither Stamps.
Hope Policy Institute provides independent, nonpartisan analysis of public and private policies that affect the financial security of Mid-South families and communities. Hope's work supports efforts to create an environment that ensures that all people, no matter where they live, have the opportunity to prosper. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Together, there is hope. HopePolicy.org. For more than 20 years, Hope Credit Union has provided responsible financial products and services to families and businesses across the Mid-South. You can learn more about Hope's work to create financial opportunity for people and communities in the nation's most persistently poor regions at hopecu.org. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Together, there is hope.
Thank you. Tomorrow, Trace Pathways will be having its annual agricultural field day hosted on Stamps Farms in Learning, Mississippi. And we're joined now by City Councilman DeKeitha Stamps. Is that your Stamps?
Yes, it's our farm.
Really? Because yeah. You know what? I'm going to go Donnie and Marie on you now. I've always thought of you as a little bit of rock and roll. I never knew that you were a little bit country, too.
I'm all the way country. All the way country.
Wow. This is great. I've seen some of the pictures. Did you go up earlier this week as well?
Yeah, we had our first day was yesterday. It was a soft day, so we only had about 300 students out yesterday.
Only 300 students? Wow, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Wait a minute. How big is Stamps Farm?
Well, this portion is about 76 acres, so there's enough space for the children to run and play and learn, because I grew up on a farm, and everything I know, I learned farming. From religion to faith. A farmer has to be a mechanic, a veterinarian, a botanist, a business owner.
Right.
You got to have a whole lot of faith. So I learned just about everything. The foundation for all learning for me came on a farm.
What are you trying to do with the kids? Because it seems to, I can't imagine that they don't have a ball when they go out there.
They have an absolute blast. They get down there when the bus drivers, you know, tell great stories, because most of these children have never left Jackson, Mississippi, or, you know, a lot of them haven't left Jackson. So they get to going down Highway 18, and they're just like, oh, where are we going, Texas? You know, most of them haven't left the inner parts of the city. So they get to going, and they learn about farming and cows and horses.
What is their reaction? Because I know, you know, you hear some stories in cities like, you know, I grew up in Chicago or New York, and, you know, where do chickens come from the supermarket. So what, when they get out there and they actually see these animals, what is their reaction?
They're like, that's where carrots come from. That's where greens come from. I thought they came from Walmart. Mm-hmm. No, son, that's where a hamburger comes from, right there.
Right. And, you know, there have been several studies that have shown when kids actually get engaged in the farming, they're more interested in eating what they grew. Even if they don't like the foods, they then become more interested.
Self-determination is one of the hallmarks of a farmer. And that's what we lost in the Black community over the last several years, is self-determination. And that's one of the pillars of a farmer. And teaching that to young people and let them feel that energy. The teachers, you know, they try to control them when they come out there, but I just say, hey, darling, just let them go. Let them have a good time.
They're not going to run off the 76 acres. Don't worry.
No, they're not going anywhere. They'll
get
tired.
300
before they get to the
kids.
There'll be 2,000 altogether.
Wow.
Right. Well, after, so, you know, we average about, you know, between 1,500 and 2,000 every year. So, so tomorrow, come on out to Stamps Farms, and we will show the children an absolute great time. You can go to tracepathwaysfarms.com to sign up.
You know, I think it's helpful sometimes to contrast, you know, compare and contrast. And when you think about not only where you grew up, but when you grew up, how is it different, do you think, for these kids now, especially, you know, we know there's some problems with the schools now. So what do you think are the challenges for these kids that maybe you didn't face?
Well, the challenges is just not having access to something else. Even though I grew up Jackson Public Schools, Timberlawn and Sidwell and Forest Hill, every day after school, I had to have my stuff ready when my father got off work to go to the farm to work. Same thing on the weekends and on Sundays. So a lot of things that we did on the farm really aided in my development. That a lot of kids here don't have.
Right. And that learning, that work ethic, and actually connecting a sense of work and what it means, is, I think that's critical. Maybe that's why you've been so successful, Councilman Stamps.
I do my best, but, you know, all the credit goes to God.
How important are these kind of programs? Because we know that the system itself is cutting back. We know that they've cut back on after-school programs.
That's right.
So the chance for you to be able to give something like this to the kids is spectacular, really.
Right. It just augments, gives them a point of reference. And when they come down to the farm, the fourth graders are studying herbivores right now. Well, I can show them a cow, which is a herbivore.
Right.
You know, so it can connect what they're learning in the classroom. And everything is in line with what they're learning in the schools right now. So we have an education director that lines up the curriculum that's taught on the farm to what they're being taught in this week at school. So from first grade all the way to sixth grade, everything is lined up with what they're being taught already.
Wow, that's fantastic. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back for more of our conversation with Jackson City Councilman Takeitha Stamp. Stick around.
Hope Enterprise Corporation is a family of development organizations dedicated to strengthening communities, building assets, and improving lives in the Delta and other economically distressed parts of Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Tennessee. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Learn more about Hope's work to create opportunity where it is needed most. hope-ec.org.
Hi, I'm Kamasi Washington, and you're listening to Epic Jazz on the cool and current station, WJSU.
Welcome back to the Full Spectrum on Cool and Current, WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty, and I'm pleased to be sitting here with City Councilman Takeitha Stamps. Jackson City Councilman, but you all knew that. You were telling me during the break about Dr. Rosie Payton, who used to be with JPS, who's the educational director for Trace Parkway's Farms, and how instrumental she has been in making this happen.
Yeah, you know, 5 years ago when we started this venture, Dr. Rosie Payton had just retired from Jackson Public Schools. She was the superintendent of elementary schools for JPS. And she was talking about how she had a hard time connecting practical life to learning. And so she asked, could she have a field day on our farm? So we provide the facilities, and she provides the programmatic things. She aligns what they're learning in the classroom right now based on the curriculum of JPS to practical things on the farm. So when they come, it's more than just run and play. It connects with what they're actually learning. And then we also partner with several organizations. Alcorn State University's Extension Service brings their equestrian exhibit there. The Natural Science Museum brings their reptile exhibit. Waste Management brings a garbage truck out there, and they talk about recycling. We have a few stations to talk about different segments of our farm because we use solar power to power all of our fences on our farm, so I can teach them about solar energy.
Oh, man.
You know, we take them through the nature trail, and they can learn about the different types of trees, and I show them things like the aspartame tree where we make aspirin from. You know, like in the old days, they should tell you, hey, go chew on this bark.
I need to come see these things.
Right. You know, so, there are.
That's fascinating because we know there's a big culture. I know in Yazoo City where my people came from, there was a hill across the street where they would come to eat dirt because there was certain minerals in the dirt. Right. So it's fascinating how before
cancer, we were healthy.
Right. Well, you know, the traditional medicine that people, you know, that was passed from generation to generation, we've lost some of that, it seems. Well, you know, I can't have you here and not talk a little politics because you're opinionated, Takeitha Stamps, and we want to hear your opinions. Let's start national. The latest breakdown from the New York Times, 93% chance of Hillary Clinton winning. But we don't know. You never know till the last day. But how has it struck you? This has been one campaign.
Well, I mean, to me, this presidential race has been, embarrassing globally, because I have friends all over the world. And, I lived in, 18 different countries overseas in the military. And I have friends who have been messaging me that they watch this. And they said, this is the best we can do. And I think that's the point. We have devolved politics in America to the gutter. And if we're going to be the global leader as a country, we must stand up and present ourselves this way and not lean to these gutter type conversations in politics and raise the bar, raise the discussion, because there are real global issues out there, real threats out there, real things going on that affect everyone's lives. But we have just skewed things to this. And I don't know if it's reality TV.
This is a unique candidate.
But it's at all levels. I mean, look at every level of government in this country, from cities to states to nations. All of it has devolved to a lower level that's below the issue. So we have to raise the consciousness and the issues and talk about better things than what we're doing.
And there seems to be some real issues we're going to have to deal with coming out of this. Like the race, the way this has exacerbated race relations in the country is just phenomenal to me. Much of which, you always knew there were some people who had these attitudes, but it seems that there are more than one might have thought, and that there's a real gulf now between some white and black folks, and that's something we're going to have to deal with.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And we just have to work with it because, you know, when they say make America great again, they really are saying they're not allowed to be white like they want to be. And they want to be white like they want to be and comfortable again.
You think that's the main message? Because I think it might have multiple messages. On the trade issue.
Yeah, when has America been great for black people? When has America been great, like truly great for all? And there's a lot of people, good white folks, good black folks, who want America to be finally great.
Right. Or
who want America to be finally great, to stand up to the principles that it was founded on. There's a lot of people who want that to birth itself. And there are a lot of people who don't want that to birth.
Let's bring it on home.
Okay.
What's going on over there at City Hall, Councilman Stamps?
It's never a slow day in the COJ. Every day it's always something on fire.
You know, it's interesting to me, though, if you look at every level, if you look at the city, if you look at the state, if you look at the country, we're in for some real financial reckoning at every level of government.
That's right.
You know, and let me ask you one thing for certain. Are you in favor of changing the form of government
in the city?
Right, I know, but everybody might not know. I know that, but tell me why.
Well, the first question we have to ask is, has this form of government served us well? 30 years ago, when the citizens of Jackson went to the polls to vote to change the form of government, they changed it to the mayor-council form of government. And we just need to ask ourselves, has this form of government worked or has it not? And I don't believe that it has. And this is not an indictment on any one particular administration or any particular person. I believe the system that we are playing under has not performed for us, and we need to move to a better system of government that allows for more equity and more balance of leadership.
How difficult would it be? Because I believe that would eliminate some council members. So how difficult is it going to be to bring this, push this through?
Well, the first step is to get enough of the petition signed. We'll need about 10% of the electorate to sign petitions to put it on the ballot. And what we're proposing is a softer move than the state law dictates. We're saying that let's vote next year during the normal elections and let it take effect in 2021. So that'll give us 4 years to rewrite ordinances, change policies, train those policies and practices, you know, do redistricting. And what it'll look like is basically similar to the county, where you have five people running the whole city, four council people, one mayor. Everybody gets to vote, and you have an administrator or a manager to manage the government, who is accountable to the entire board.
Well,
I like to have somebody running the city who I can fire.
Well, I mean, there does have to be
accountability.
I mean, if nothing else, this has shown that.
It's mainly for the department heads. When the department heads know that their boss can be fired, then that changes that dynamic. This is not about a mayor. This is about the people who really run the city are the department heads and deputy directors and those supervisors. When they know that chain of leadership can be broken any given Tuesday, their performance is different.
All right. Well, Jackson City Councilman DeKeitha Stamps, always great to have you here. I've got to get out to that farm. I hope I can come tomorrow. But if not, I really want to come out there, take some shots, do a package about that. Okay. Fantastic work. That's our show for today. Don't forget to catch Metro Morning Live with Rob J tomorrow at 7 and 10 on JSU TV, Comcast Channel 14. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow at 4 for more of the Full Spectrum. You can catch us on FM 88.5 or online at WJSU.org. Up next, Latin Jazz with host Dale Morris.